Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too.
When God made you, he had all the options put on. You are fully loaded and totally equipped.
So do this with me.
Where did we ever come up with the style of preaching we have today? There is some entertaining preaching, but not convicting preaching, and the legacy has been tragic.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The question is not, are you angry, but at what are you angry? This is Wretched Radio. Ed Welch, a book on depression, a chapter dedicated to a subject that plagues us all, anger. You say, what does anger have to do with depression? Dr. Ed Welch says the two are connected. Quote, fear is the most obvious co-conspirator with depression. Anger is the most common. The formula is a simple one. Sadness plus anger equals depression. Are you angry? Careful, you could be knocking on depression's door, especially when you combine it with fear, which is something that the Christian should not possess. We should be believing the truth. I know that there are things that look kind of scary, but when we are confronted with things that cause us to be fearful, maybe fear of making a wrong decision, fear of failing, dying, suffering, being exposed, losing a loved one, losing your job, losing money, losing your security, losing your popularity, your looks, being abandoned, rejected, left alone, not having control. We don't listen to lies. We listen to the truth of God's word. Just consider all of the promises. When Jesus said, I will be with you even till the end of the age, he meant it. Do not be afraid, for I am with you, Genesis 26:24. Or do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for your Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you, Deuteronomy 31:6. Or there's Isaiah 41:10. Don't fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. Or Isaiah 49. The Lord has forsaken me. The Lord has forsaken me, said Zion. Can a member forget the baby at her breast? Can the mother rather forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Well, even if she does forget, I won't forget you. I've engraved your name on the palm of my hands. Your walls are ever before me. Or John 14, I will ask the Father, and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever, the Spirit of truth. He lives with you and will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans. That's fascinating to me in the context of John chapter 14, because John chapter 14, 15, and 16 is all about not letting your heart be troubled. And one of the ways that your heart shouldn't be troubled is knowing that God gives you a comforter, a counselor, who will guide you in all truth. Why is that so helpful when it comes to anxiety and depression? It's because you're believing lies. The Holy Spirit replaces lies with truth. The result is the joy that is in the Father and the Son. If you aren't believing the truth of God's promises, you will have fear. Now add that to anger, wah and la, you got yourself depression. You have anger issues. I have anger issues. We've all got anger issues. Again, from Dr. Ed Welch, helping us to identify the anger that is inside of us so that we can kill it and have joy. Remember, he writes that anger hides. The angry person is always the last person to know that he or she is angry. I'm not an angry person, you idiot! We will acknowledge that we are depressed, fearful, in pain, but we can be blind to our anger. It is always another person's problem, not our own. A few questions that might help you uncover the root of anger. The assumption now is not am I, but about what am I angry? What are your personal needs? It's a euphemism for rights, demands. Got to have this. Got to have a lovely home. Got to have a good reputation. Got to have a solid job. What is it? What's your got to have a husband that makes me feel good. Got to have well-behaved kids. Where have my needs been unmet? Where have my, quote, rights been violated? What do I think I deserve that I haven't received? Of whom am I jealous? If you limit your awareness to just overt rage, you're going to miss it. Violent anger is just one expression of anger. It comes out in all kinds of ways. Cool withdrawal. You can have hot, heated anger, or you can have a chilly attitude toward people. Same thing. Sarcasm, jealousy, slander, complaining, gossip, indifference, all forms of anger. And Ed is saying there's a root to it. You think it should be like this. It's not. Therefore, I'm mad. Because I deserve that. Sadness, by the way, can cover rage. So anger, knowing that it can be hot or cold. The difference is that hot anger is brief and explosive. Cold settles in long term. Depressive anger is usually cold. The cold shoulder, withdrawal, calculated rejection, blaming others, feeling sorry for yourself. I've been hurt. I haven't gotten what I deserve. Here's a quote for you. Avoid the hot-tempered person, but tremble before the cold, distant, uncaring, angry person. Because anger says, you have done something wrong. You have violated my rights. It's making some kind of a judgment. Maybe it's even accurate. It can be totally accurate. Yeah, you're right. Your wife did that. Yes, your kid did. Yep, he sure did. You're right. You might be responding to a real wrong, but that's just the beginning of the story. Anger settles in. It takes up residence. Will you turn to the true God who shows compassion to those who have been victimized, or will you trust yourself? That's the question right there. Our emotional issues are always a theological statement. What am I thinking about God in this moment? Do I really believe that vengeance is God? You believe that you should have this. Somebody doesn't do that. You believe that the road should be clear for you to get down the freeway so you can get to work on time. A guy pulls in front of you. You are now going to say something about God. Do I trust God that I'm going to get there on time, or even if I'm late, there's a purpose for that? Do I trust that or do I not? Before I start yelling or waving digits. Your response is theological. Will you trust God or will you trust self? You're angry because your rights and your glory, not God's, have been violated. Somebody did something wrong. You're mad. You see that. But what you don't see is that anger reveals more about your heart than it does about the person who violated your right. Anger is between you and God, not the person. This is a demonstration that Christianity is the religion whose theology does not sit in a book. It invades our hearts and our heads and our emotions, our responses to people. And this isn't just people on the road. This is people in your home. This is people in your office. How you respond to them is a theological statement between you and God. That certainly does elevate the conversation now, doesn't it? From Ed Welch, do you see the role reversal in anger? God has a right to test our hearts. Who are we to test God and question him? God has that person zig right in front of you, causing you to slow down. Oh, now I'm going to be 3 minutes late according to my cell phone that you're legally not supposed to be looking at anyway. God wanted that to happen to see what's going to come out of you. You flip out, you say something, call him a name. You just said something about God. How dare you, Lord? How dare you test me? How dare you put this person in front of me? It is the height of arrogance. Yes, circumstances can be difficult, but God is still God, and he has the right to do whatever he wants. Our God is in the heavens. He does whatever he pleases, right? And it's always good. When you dig deep, anger is about spiritual allegiances. Who are you going to trust? It indicates when we are angry that we don't trust God in the moment. We can't say, I'm going to stop being angry. That's nice. That's a good mantra. but it's a shortcut that's going to fail. It's about God. This goes deeper. It's not just, all right, that's it. I'm going to pretend I'm not mad. Doesn't fix your heart. Your anger is revealing your attitude about God. Your worst relationship with other people reveals your heart before God. If we don't love others, you're not loving God. If you're angry with others, you are standing against God. You don't want to be standing against God. With our complaining and grumbling, we've set up an implicit test for God. Will he give us what we want or not? We've made life about us, and when we do, we are doomed to a life of perpetual dissatisfaction. Hence, anger ending in what? Depression. And that is why anger combined with fear, pride, circumstances, a lack of high view of God will always result in you being bummed out, unhappy, and increasingly miserable. Should you determine that you are going to put an end to anger? Yep. But the question is, how are you going to do that? I'm going to grind this out and make it happen. Or are you going to change your view about God? This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. Thanks for sharing your wretched stories with us at idea@wretched.org. We truly do love hearing from you. Let me share a bit from an email we have from Jeremy. Thank you so much for all you do. The Wretched Radio podcast has been such an encouragement and challenge to me. I've been saved for a few years, but listening to the podcast caused me to start questioning why I believe what I believe and how to understand it more and be more firm in it. Also, I'm originally from New Jersey, so I enjoy the sarcasm. Thank you for all that you guys do. Blessings, Jeremy. Jeremy, believe me, it is a blessing when we get to hear wretched stories like that. Share your wretched story at idea@wretched.org. And if you are able, might you help support Wretched to make more stories like this possible? Go to wretched.org/donate for details on becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Forget the power of cheese. The power of the ultrasound.
Darlene came to our clinic. She's accompanied by her boyfriend. She just came from Planned Parenthood, but they were unable to provide an ultrasound because they charged for them, and she probably didn't have the money. When she's in the counseling room, apart from her boyfriend, she says that the relationship with the baby's father was probably going to end anyway. So she wanted to abort, presented the gospel. She politely declined the gospel. We gave her an ultrasound, and she walked out the door, still abortion-minded, with the ultrasound picture in hand. We made another call for her a couple days later, and she said, you know, I can't come in, but do you know where I can get some prenatal vitamins? And she had chose life.
One ultrasound, $28. $28, one life. How many ultrasounds could you provide through preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched?
What are some of the best partnerships you will have in your entire life? Marriage? Business? Wrong. The best partnership you will ever have is becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Because when you're a gospel partner, you help Wretched reach the lost with the gospel. Without your consistent financial support, Wretched couldn't do what we do. Things like distribute 1 million copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? Or say, film a new show, call it Road Trip to Truth, and get John Fabares to be the host. If you're already supporting Wretched, we are extremely grateful. Thank you very much. If you're not supporting Wretched, would you please consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on a monthly basis? Because the more our gospel partners give, the more we are able to give away. Visit wretched.org/donate to become a gospel partner and help us reach those in need of the gospel. Because we may not be the best partnership you'll ever have, but we come pretty close. SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Advocate. When we as God's redeemed people sin, Jesus is our advocate before the Father. It is on the basis of Christ's righteousness that we are saved, not our own works.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's talk politics, shall we?
Do we have to?
Yeah, just kidding. Anyway, this is Wretched Radio. Let's talk theology by taking a look at what is going on in the political world. We are not a political talk show, but if politics warrants a theological conversation, I'm all in for that. Need to remember, even as we watch politics, it's always about worldview being represented. And indeed, there are some worldviews being represented. Apparently, CNN did an equality town hall. Equality town hall? I wonder what they mean by equality. Equality in opportunity or equality in outcome? Nevertheless, Beto O'Rourke was asked if churches and other religious institutions should lose tax-exempt status for opposing same-sex marriage. In no uncertain terms, you bet we should, unless you endorse gay marriage. Wow, there it is right there. At least they're saying it overtly. What are we to do with this? I think it's time to get ready, Christian. It doesn't hurt to stock up a little bit spiritually when it's pretty clear that there is a wind blowing that smells like persecution. What does it smell like? Beto O'Rourke's response: take away the tax-exempt privilege of churches. Where did that idea even come from? The idea was that we thought once upon a time that churches did such good for the community that to help them flourish, stay in business, if you will, we would not tax them. They would be tax-exempt, and therefore, they could do more good for the community. I think that ideal is lost. Beto O'Rourke, one of the more extreme liberals, although that's getting hard to identify these days, one of the more extreme liberals, he's just saying it out loud. You should lose your tax-exempt status. Isn't this what we've all been wondering? Even since Obergefell, when it was decided by the Supreme Court, who I didn't think actually decided what is legally imposed in this country. I mean, they decide on whether a law is constitutional, but it seems like they're making laws from the bench. The question was asked, well, what about Christians? What about religious people who maybe disagree with this gay marriage business? Well, that's an interesting question, said the, Barack Obama. Yeah, that's his name. Represented. What was that guy's name anyway? Oh, his name might be forgotten, but his policies still linger. His policies still waft. Maybe that's a better term. Well, now the question is being answered by at least one political candidate saying you should take away their tax-exempt status. And where does this leave us with religious liberty? It doesn't, frankly. It steps on us. Now, I get it. He's way out on the fringe side, sort of, still. But if you remember, Bernie Sanders was considered flaky and fringy. Now he's a front runner. What is he doing there? Well, increasingly left in our values in this country, political positions included in that statement. You're seeing increasingly people who were considered radically extreme. 10, 20 years ago, this would have been like, wait, what? You want to take away religious liberty? How dare you? If they're saying it now, at a CNN town hall? Uh-oh, Christian. Read 1 Peter. Get ready. Denny Burke commenting on this town hall. Quote, Christians, we need to be ready for a new reality. Be ready for it. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but let's be ready. We are likely to face fines and other penalties for staying faithful to Christ's teaching. Our churches may eventually lose tax-exempt status. Get ready, church. Get ready, nonprofit organization. Just think about managing your funds as if you had to pay taxes because you might. Now, my hunch is that it won't stop there and that you just won't be allowed to say or believe those things. Nevertheless, we'll just take one miserable step backwards at a time. Any number of negative outcomes are possible in the approaching conflagration, writes Denny Burke. Is this being a Glenn Beck alarmist? No. I don't think you have to be, frankly, all that bright to recognize the handwriting is on the wall here. Besides, didn't Jesus promise this? If the world hates you, it hated me before it hated you. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know the one who sent me. When people hate us, it is because they are hating the Lord. That should help us to endure. They don't hate you. Well, they might, but they're hating the Lord. And what does Peter remind us to do when it comes to the issue of persecution? He encourages us to be so loving, to be so kind. I wonder if this, not everybody in evangelical Christianity, but this rather pugnacious attitude that so many have towards secularists, I wonder how that's going to play when they are coming and breaking down our doors to say, hey, what are you talking about in there? What are you believing in there? Are we gonna hold that attitude? We're not supposed to. We're supposed to love them so much that even as they hurt us, they wonder, what is up with those people? Why are they acting this way? In other words, persecution is evangelistic. This is a consistent theme throughout the Bible, that we respond to people in a surprising manner, that we love people even when they are not loving us, so that they'll want to know, sup with you. Are we ready, church? Booker, that would be your Cory Booker. He was at the LGBTQ town hall. I think this was a different night. Are they doing them one at a time? He said, quote, juxtaposing issues of religious freedom and LGBTQ rights all of his life as a Christian with people using religion as a justification for discrimination. What's that smell? Yes, it's irony that they are now discriminating against us because they think discrimination is bad. I know. But remember, discrimination is a one-way street. Quote, it said in Micah, oh boy, what do you want from your Lord? But what is it you want from your people? Which is to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly. Walk humbly. And so for me, I cannot allow as a leader that people are going to use religion as a justification for discrimination. Hey, how's about loving us, Corey? How does that verse apply to us? He added, quote, I can respect your religious views. Guess what conjunction is coming next?
However.
But also protect people from discrimination. Hey, Corey, you let us know how that's going to work out, will you? And aren't they constantly discriminating? And I don't care if they do, quite honestly. If a Muslim doesn't want me in his barbershop because I'm a Christian, I say, okay, fine. Then I and my Christian friends won't give you any business. There you go. If you want to discriminate against me in that way, that's fine by me. But I get that same right also, don't I, Mr. Booker, sir? He used the opportunity to push for the Equality Act as one of the laws that, quote, do not allow people to discriminate in our schools, in education, healthcare, globally. My faith, as well as my American values, will make me fight on every front to make sure people are not discriminating against someone because of who they are, unless they're a Christian who discriminates against people that I'm trying to get to vote for me. I am really sorry I added that last part, but it seems to me... Worship leader is running for Congress in California. Oh boy, morals are low, taxes are high. While I agree with that statement, let's remember the Christian faith is not about imposing morals. Now, a Christian who is working in government, who uses Christian values to create laws that are good for humans, that provide flourishing for people, thumbs up. But if we mix and mingle the idea that we can use a political mechanism or lever to impose values on people, as Christians and that is our message, that's different. Do you hear the difference? I can use my Christian values to say, I think that law would be better for people. I think that law would be good for people. But if I think that Christianity is about simply getting people to behave better, uh-oh. People don't need better external laws. They need a heart transplant. What's the big deal about this particular worship leader? Well, guess what? He happens to be a Bethel Music artist. Terrific. Don't forget Bethel, a part of the New Apostolic Reformation movement. They are all about invading. I think now they've got 8 mountains of dominion, but nevertheless, 7 mountains of dominion. The latest one, I think, is technology. And if they can conquer those territories, then guess what? We run the planet. And you know what that means? Jesus is going to come back. And what is he going to do because we prepared the earth for him? He's going to give us everybody else's stuff. That's basically what is taught in the New Apostolic Reformation movement, and now a political effort to accomplish conquering the political mountain. Oh, boy. By the way, reported in Fox News again, this is Wretched Radio.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Know your reformers. John Wycliffe, called the Morning Star of the Reformation, was a professor at Oxford in the 1300s who preached against papal authority in matters of doctrine, politics, and church practice. After his death, his bones were dug up, burned, and spread over the river. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is Wretched Radio. It's a brave new world, Christian. Are you prepared? Story number one. A terminally ill scientist wants to live forever. Isn't that funny that people have always been trying to figure out a way to live forever? It couldn't be because God has written eternity on our hearts. If we're just primordial ooze, so you've run your course, be done with it. Time to clock out. You'll be at peace. You won't even know that you used to exist. It will be well with your soul. But the world knows it doesn't end when we take our last breath. And so this scientist who has a muscle-wasting disease, that's sad, terminally ill, has been trying to transform himself into the world's first full cyborg. That's right. Undergoing a series of incredibly complex and risky operations, including developing a lifelike avatar of his face before he lost any muscle. So I think the idea is to capture part of his brain, put it with electronics so that he thinks he can live forever. He's confused. His brain might live forever if that were possible. I don't think that it can, because we know, because of the fall, everything poops out eventually. Even if you can store all of that information in a computer somehow, taking all of his memories, taking all of his thoughts, all of his wisdom, all of his knowledge, put it into some sort of software package, that's not him. Your brain is a storage facility. That's it. Your brain is the connector between your soul, what makes you you, and the real and the physical world. That's it. So you can store everything from in there, but that's not you. Your soul is you. Now we're dualistic. You have a body and a soul, but if you do not have your soul captured, you know, that ain't you. You can download every single memory that you've got. All those are memories. That is not you. The avatar is designed to respond using artificially intelligent body language, exploring eye-tracking technology to enable him to control multiple computers using only his eyes. Now, will something like this ever work out? I have no idea. But from a Christian standpoint, this fellow is not going to be living forever as a cyborg. That's not him. Don't be deceived. You are not your brain. Quote, it goes without saying that all my physical interaction with the world will become robotic. Yeah, that if you're a robot, then it's not you. And naturally, my existing five senses are going to be enhanced. But more importantly, part of my brain and all of my external persona will soon be electronic, totally synthetic. From then on, I'll be part hardware. No, you'll be hardware. Part wetware. No, you'll be wetware. And you will be digital. And you will be analog. I've got more upgrades in progress than Microsoft. Mine isn't just a version change. It's a metamorphosis. No. No, it's not, sir. Not a metamorphosis at all. When you die, you're going to meet God. Period. That's what's going to happen to you. And Christian, that's what's going to happen to you. And that is why we do well not to try to work on cockamamie schemes to try to lengthen life forever, to find some sort of technological fountain of youth, but instead to prepare for heaven, to fit yourself for heaven. Now, to be clear, you have been justified, therefore you're fit for heaven. It's simply a term that the Puritans used to use, that God in his working on you, for you, is getting you ready for heaven, that you might enjoy it more and more and more and more and more. Who enjoys a concert more? Somebody who likes one hit that they heard from the celebrity on the radio, or somebody who knows every single song, the history behind the songs? Therefore, when it's played, it's like, oh, I know where that came from. Oh, I know what inspired that. Ditto heaven. You might go because you've repented and put your trust in Jesus. And trust me, that'll be very good. But the more you know about him, the more you become like him, the more you will enjoy him when you get there. That is being fit for heaven. Brave New World story number two, and I'm sorry for this, it's deluxe creepy. Both the New York Times Drudge Report. Ugh. Sex robots, they're here. And likely to stay. And this article from HollandSentinel.com is loaded with all kinds of troublesome information. Unlike toys and dolls, sorry, Mom and Dad, which are typically sold in off-the-radar shops and hidden in closets, sex bots may become mainstream. A 2017 survey suggested almost half of Americans think that being intimate with a robot will become a common practice within 50 years. Okay. All righty. That's just delightful. You're still not having intimate behavior at all. You're maybe doing something physical with an object, but that's not being intimate. You know, the word intimate, it actually means intimate, that something happens, that something transpires. You use your cell phone, but it's not an intimate act. You can do the physical act, but that will not make it an intimate act, and it will leave people feeling just as miserable as they already do. Sex is intended to be with another human being of the opposite gender in a lifelong covenant relationship with an understanding that it is a picture of the gospel. It is an intimate act, a physical act that is a precursor. It is a small foreshadowing of the joys and delights, non-sexual, that we will experience in heaven when we see our God face to face. Only then will you enjoy it the way that it was intended. Anything else will fall short. Oh, the world. Now, from this article, I thought this was just fascinating. What some people are concerned about. Dangers lurk. Even in seemingly innocent scene where a sex bot and human hold hands and kiss. What if the sex bot's lips were manufactured with lead paint? Huh? Huh? Look at how horrible that would be. And what if the robot with the strength of five humans holding the hand crushes the human's fingers in a display of passion? Huh? What about that? I could be wrong, but I think there's bigger concerns here. Just as a human partner, says this article, learns by remembering what words were soothing and which type of touch was comforting, so too a sex bot likely is going to store and process massive amounts of private information. What regulations are in place to ensure that this data remains private? Honestly, these are the concerns. How vulnerable will the sex bot be to hacking? Well, I guess that's something we could worry about, or we could just do away with this nonsense. Could the state use sex bots as surveillance devices for sex offenders? I guess they could, or we could just get rid of the idea. Would a man use a childlike sex bot to be more or less likely to harm an actual child? I guess we could ponder that, or we could just get rid of this stupid idea. Honestly, do we? Well, I guess we probably do. And if we haven't, we probably will be. When a man is being intimate with a goat, are there any health issues? Could there be some sexually transmitted diseases that take place? I don't know. I got another idea. Maybe we just, we say that's against the law, because it's against even nature, and I would think that even pagans could get that. There was a time, not so long ago, this is an article now from a lawyer, I believe, commenting on this trend that even the New York Times seems to be identifying as a potential reality. There was a time not so long ago when humans attracted to the same sex felt embarrassed to make this public. Today, society is similarly ambivalent about the ethics of digisexuality. So here's what he's suggesting. You know, there used to be this sense of there was no PDA. You didn't demonstrate affection in public. That would be kind of shameful to do that. Well, we got used to that. Well, then when it came to gay relationships, that was taboo. But we've worked through that. Right now, we're kind of thinking digisexuality, kind of odd. But it's just a phrase used to describe a number of human technology intimate relationships. Will there be a time not so far in the future when humans attracted to robots? Oh, no. Will gladly announce their relationship with a machine? So what I read from this is that somebody who is attracted to a robot, that too is going to become a protected class under the umbrella of sexual preference. Oy, Gavilta Fish Larry. Is it important that Christians are able to bring a worldview to the table? Yes. Yes, it is. But please let us do it with the authority of the Bible. Haven't we made that mistake in the past? Instead of saying, hey, you shouldn't be intimate with a robot because it might have lead paint on its lips. Or a study showed, how's about we say, no, in the beginning, God created male and female. He intended them to enjoy intimacy as a foreshadowing of the delights of heaven, a picture of the gospel, and a one-man, one-woman covenant relationship. What is our authority? Oh, here it is. Thus saith the Lord. That is the Christian message. Right? This is Wretched Radio. Couldn't say it any better than Michael Woolworth from Bible League International.
The world will drill wells and provide food and shelter. Those are very important causes.
Yes.
We smile favorably upon those. But getting God's word to believers half a world away, people you won't meet this side of eternity, that's on us as God's people.
Ain't nothing wrong with digging a well, but it is only the Christian church that can provide living water. Bible League International for decades, delivering Bibles to believers who have made a profession of faith, believers who have studied the basics of the Christian faith, are then given living water in the Word, a Bible, for just $5 per Bible. You could deliver a Bible to a believer overseas through Bible League International. Might it be possible you could send, say, 6 per month? Please call Bible League at 1-800-YES-WORD.
The engine light turning on in your car. Forgetting to pay a bill. Not having don't stub your toe to give out to children on Halloween. These are all very scary things. But we can at least help you with that last one. Halloween is right around the corner, and that means it's the perfect opportunity to share the gospel with your neighbors. This year, while you pass out the candy to the kids coming to your door, also give them a copy of don't stub your toe. I mean, come on. They are literally coming right to your door. It doesn't get any easier than that. Unless, of course, they walk up and directly ask you, "What must I do to inherit the kingdom of heaven?" But they hardly ever do that, do they? Visit wretched.org/toe now and order your copies of Don't Stub Your Toe so you're stocked up for Halloween trick-or-treaters. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Get your copies of Don't Stub Your Toe today at wretched.org/toe.
When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11, another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month, you'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. The book of Ruth tells of a Moabite widow who chose to follow the God of Israel and found favor in the eyes of a godly man named Boaz, who claimed her family's land as her kinsman redeemer. Ruth and Boaz are the ancestors of Jesus and a foreshadowing of Jesus' work as our kinsman redeemer. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Just got a text, and it is a big thumbs up. This is Wretched Radio as we speak. Okay, at least as I'm presently speaking. Well, maybe you're speaking right back at me. That wouldn't shock me, frankly. But just received a text from Zach. He's a part of our crew here at Wretched, who is working on Road Trip to Truth with John Fabares, who happens to be in town from Los Angeles, California. They're filming the Tops and the Tails. We've already been out to the campuses, interviewing kids, witnessing to students. We've also talked to our, quote, experts, people like Mike Riccardi, who I get to see at the Truth Conference this week. Very excited about that. Look forward to seeing you if you're going to be at the Truth Conference. Looking forward to that a great deal. Mike Riccardi, he is a bang-up preacher. He's going to be there with John MacArthur, Phil Johnson, Justin Peters, Vodi Bakum. It's just an honor to be a part of what is just one of the events that they're doing at Grace Community Church to celebrate John MacArthur's 50th anniversary in faithful ministry. Get to see Mike Riccardi, who was one of our, quote, experts. I'll get to see Nathan Boosnitz, Professor Nathan Boosnitz. Shai Lin, he did a great job. Wow, he did a great job talking about the gospel. Shai Lin, if you're not familiar with him, he's a rapper fellow. But he wears a belt, his pants are firmly secured around his waist, and his theology is firmly secured in his noggin. And when he talks, even though he's a conservative guy, you just like him. He's dare I say, nice and likable. He's one of those guys that I would do well to study for that tone, for how you present sharp things in a way that doesn't say, "I dislike you, I think you're a nincompoop," but instead is like, I like you just fine, but I'm just going to tell you something that you're going to totally disagree with. He's got that unique ability. Tom Hammond, who is the fellow who wrote What Time is Purple. By the way, if you still want to give away What Time is Purple, we now offer up to 50 copies. We will send them to you at no charge. You have to pay for shipping, but we'll send them to you at no charge. Wretched.org/purple. Give away the gospel. We will help you. Tom Hammond is a part of the show. That is going to be awesome. Also, I've already seen the episode that we're working on. Okay, let me see if I can recreate this argument. Tom Hammond, the guy who wrote What Time is Purple, wanted to make a big deal out of beauty. He remembers driving around through the mountains, maybe the Blue Ridge Mountains. They were the mountains somewhere in America. And there were signs that said scenic view. So he'd pull over and he'd look, and sure enough, it was a beautiful view. And he asked himself the question, why? Why did somebody determine this view is scenic if people take the time and the risk of pulling off on a mountain road that they will be rewarded with a scene that makes them go, wow, stand there, I'll take a picture, I'll take a selfie. Why is something beautiful and other things are not beautiful? Why do we determine that overlook on a mountain in South Carolina is beautiful, but we don't have an overlook over a garbage dump saying scenic view? Because there's something about beauty that is consistent. Now, you can get sidetracked on the argument about beauty pointing to a creator, because some people would say, no, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. No, it's not. There are some things that some people determine more beautiful than others, but even when pressed, will tell you, okay, I prefer that I listen to that sound or see that painting over that. That there is a baseline for beauty that somehow, even though people have different tastes and preferences, and some things come closer to hitting the mark than others when it comes to issues of beauty, we all appreciate beauty. For instance, my singing. That's right. My singing. It's not good. I grant you that. But contrasted to hearing a hammer hitting a saw. You'd rather listen to the Bee Gees than that, wouldn't you? Even if you're not a fan of the Bee Gees, and I hope you're not, you would prefer listening to that because you at least recognize, okay, that's orderly, that's harmonious, and it sounds better than just ding, bang, ding, bang, bang, ding, bang, ding, boing, bang, bing. Right? How do we know that there is a God based on beauty? Think of it like this. I have a piece of paper in front of me and a ruler. With the ruler, I take a pencil and draw a straight line. There's your standard, a straight line. If I draw a line next to it that's crooked, how do you know that line is crooked? You say, well, because you got a straight line right next to it. That's the standard. And I would say that's sort of right, but not quite. No, that drawn line, it represents the standard. The standard is the ruler itself. Similarly, God is the standard of beauty. Without a standard, there is no beauty. So God is the ruler regarding beauty. The beauty that we see revealed in this world, it's a representation of that line. And there are times when we come closer to drawing a straight line with that beauty, and other times when it's a hammer hitting the saw that it gets very crooked and we recognize that ain't a straight line at all. The only way that we know that there is a straight line is if there is a ruler, if there is a standard. The only way that we know that there is beauty is if there is a standard. And that is why, now we're going to have to reason through this backwards. Every time we go, that's beautiful, we are in essence saying, God exists. Whenever we identify something as being pretty or lovely or beautiful, that is a statement that is drawn from an understanding that the only way anything can be deemed beautiful is if there is a standard of beauty that is objective. And that is why every time a pagan goes, oh, that's lovely, they're saying there is a God. And we can make that argument too. And so we're working on Road Trip to Truth to demonstrate arguments like that that make the case that God exists to help people understand that Christianity is the only worldview that makes sense of reality as we observe it, and it's going to be aimed at a younger demographic. John Fabares is hosting it, and he's in town right now, and I just got a text from Zach saying it's going really, really well. So be encouraged. If you've been supporting us here at Wretched, we are working very hard on that, and he's going to be here all week. Even be praying for that if you'd be so kind. Even as I run off to California, he flew in from California to Atlanta so he could be working on this. It will reach a lot of people, and it is going to be most excellent. And so I just got a text from Zach saying it's going really, really well. Thought you'd be encouraged by that. And speaking of encouragement, may I encourage you to consider supporting Bible League? I know that felt a little bit out of the blue, because it was, but nevertheless, was just thinking about Bible League this morning. Pray for those guys. Sorry, but every morning, just praying for Bible League, that God would just take over the nations through the distribution of his word, that peacefully he would conquer the planet by the preaching of his word, the teaching of his word, and for people to know that they got to have the word. So they're doing an absolutely great work in distributing millions of Bibles to believers. They've got discipleship programs. They work with local churches. If you want to reach the globe through the proclamation of God's word, the distribution of God's word, please consider supporting Bible League. It is a very, very worthy ministry for your consideration. $5 a Bible, wretched.org/Bible, wretched.org/Bible. Michael Woolworth was in here a number of months ago, story after story after story after story of people overseas getting saved and then risking life and limb to bring that gospel to other people. Hey, Joey, I can tell you what country could use some Bibles right now.
Which country would that be?
That would be Dublin.
Dublin is an interesting country. Side?
Don't argue with me. I'm the talk show host here. It says, a long-serving church elder in South Dublin has been dismissed because he's in a same-sex marriage right there. You know what he was dismissed from? Presbyterian Church. That's right. In the country of Dublin, a long-serving church elder in South Dublin was dismissed from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland because he's in a same-sex marriage. He was ordained as an elder in Sandymount 12 years ago, but last month he'd been dismissed with immediate effect following a probe into his marriage. Let me tell you something. The Presbyterian Church and any evangelical church in Ireland and Scotland, they are up against it because those cultures are moving away from their Christian heritage, even whatever form it happened to take. It is getting increasingly difficult, and these folks coming under heat for their decision. In an interview with BBC, so he's going on the offensive, it felt like a kick to the stomach. Huh. Should it feel like a kick to the stomach? You didn't know what the Presbyterian Church stood for when you became an ordained elder 12 years ago? Scotland evangelicals? Wow, if you think that we're progressing negatively in America, Scotland is even further down the road when it comes to the negative attitude toward Christians. Sign after sign in both Ireland and in Scotland, they are becoming increasingly progressive cultures. I'll tell you, if they keep going the way that they're going, you can just watch it like a textbook for what's going to be happening here. All that to say, please consider supporting Bible League at wretched.org/Bible, and please keep praying for your brothers and sisters overseas, even in the nations of Scotland and Dublin, because, well, they need it. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.